This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF Baton Rouge and WWNO New Orleans. Your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow is producing, and our leadoff guest is Charles William Bustani, Jr., a physician, six-term congressman from Lafayette. Served as U.S. Representative from the 3rd Congressional District from 2005 to 2017. He lost a close race for the U.S. Senate in 2016. He narrowly lost a bid to be in a runoff with John Kennedy. Foster Campbell edged him out, and if Bustani had been in a runoff with Kennedy, he would have been the favorite because he is considered and is more moderate than Senator Kennedy and likely would have gotten the lion's share of the Democratic vote, and that most likely would have been enough to push him over the top, and he would have been the U.S. Senator rather than John Neely Kennedy. But as we know, politics has lots of twists and turns, and sometimes they work in people's favor and sometimes they don't, and Charlie Bustani has lived to fight another day. And he is an observer of American politics, and if you've heard him on this show and others through the years during the Trump era, he's not happy with the leadership of the Republican Party. And we do have an election in 4 days between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris that is, for lack of a better term, a jump ball. It is tight. It is real tight. It's tight even in the polls that we've been looking at from Jim Kitchens, who has a big outlier in that he has Harris slightly ahead in Florida, of all places, but the other states are very close in his polls, too. And Congressman Bustani, welcome again to Talk Louisiana. It's always good to catch up with you.
Well, Jim, thank you very much for having me on your program. It's great to be with you again, and I always enjoy the dialogue.
What do you make of where we are right now?
Well, I agree with you. It's a jump ball with this upcoming election, and it's really indicative of how divided the country is, and it's a pretty sharp division, and it comes at a very dangerous time for our country when you look at all the national security and foreign policy challenges we're facing, the economic uncertainty that's been launched as a result of, you know, technology and all the different forces that are driving the world's economy, which affect the United States. People feel uncertain, and this partisanship and sharp division puts our country in a very difficult and dangerous position, in my view. We need real leadership. We need leadership that's going to look at these problems, take them on in a very sober, thoughtful way, put together the right kind of team to address it, address these problems, and take the job of governing seriously. And that's what I'm not seeing right now, especially from the Republican Party.
Now, there have been reports that you have left the party that you have belonged to for your career. Is that true?
I've been a lifelong Republican, and I have stepped back and registered as an independent because I wanted to register my dissatisfaction with the direction the Republican Party is going on policy, both from a foreign policy and national security standpoint, as well as economic policy. I'm very, very disturbed by the actions that are being taken. What I've seen with the Republican platform is going to be, at least from an economic standpoint, very harmful for the country and very harmful for Louisiana specifically. And I can get into details on that if you like. But I'm also concerned about the general view of national security by Republicans. It's a complex national security environment, and they're seeing it purely in military terms and very much so in unilateral terms. And this is a time when we really need to work and lead with our allies, especially in Europe, but also Japan and South Korea, and to see the kind of disparagement of our allies by former President Trump and the way he treats our allies and the way he basically coddles our enemies. He's susceptible to flattery. And this, in my view, puts us at risk. They have a leader of our country potentially coming forward in this next term, if he's elected, to take that kind of position with our adversaries as well as our allies. And so we can't do this unilaterally. We didn't do it unilaterally in World War II, which was a big threat, obviously, and a complex time for this country. We're facing a similar complex time, a similarly complex time with China, with Russia, with Iran, with North Korea. We need serious leadership that's going to address these problems and not play games with them and not susceptible to flattery from foreign leaders.
Again, your number is 877-217-5757 for former Congressman Charles Bustani, who served 12 years on Capitol Hill as a Republican. And he was a Republican who voted most often with his delegation. And he is a person of significance from Lafayette area. And he represents an area that we love and treasure. And a listener, before we get back to the presidential election, notes the distinction between you and Clay Higgins. I mean, we talk about night and day. I would say that was quite a switch, wasn't it?
Well, we have, we're different. I had a call with Clay right after he was elected. I told him to try to do what was best for the district, keep the district and all the voices in the district in mind as you make decisions. That's what I tried to do. And sometimes I think he takes a very one-sided view on some of these issues. And I think he's put himself into controversy at times needlessly. I disagree with that kind of style. I think you have to conduct yourself in a way that will make the people in the district proud. And at the same time, will help address the issues across the district, whether it's, agriculture, our ports, trade policy, economics, the things that people care about, kitchen table issues, healthcare, and so forth. And I think Clay has chosen not to focus on those things, but, on hot button partisan issues. And it's just, it's a matter of disagreement. I disagree with him on a lot of that, but it's probably a matter of style and priority.
Well, Mark Ballard wrote his profile on him a few days ago. The word that preceded Clay Higgins was pugnacious. But I must say he's always been very kind to me, at least until now. And he is a guy who he enjoys mixing it up, no doubt about that. But for those who discount him, he presents well. He represents the same kind of Trumpian strongman image that people are embracing, particularly those on the right side of the political spectrum. And for those who also want to make the comparison, his career began, his political career, on television, like Trump. Trump was the apprentice, and Higgins was the Crime Stoppers guy. And as you know, Congressman Bustani, image and optics often mean as much as the message in politics, sometimes even more.
Oh, there's no question about it. I don't disagree with anything you just said. But my way of approaching things differed in that I would roll up my sleeves and get things done, get legislation passed, solve problems. And I think, ultimately in the long run, that's better for our district here in Southwest Louisiana and for the state for that matter. But, times have changed and, people across the country and in Louisiana seem to put more of a premium on performance rather than substance. And I understand that. And that's, perhaps why I'm not in politics today. But as a matter of principle, I feel like you have to get things done and solve problems. And if the atmosphere in Washington is going to be one of performance to get the biggest number of likes on social media and that kind of thing, that's just not the game I'm going to play. I've got other things I'd rather do.
Well, reflecting on your initial comments about foreign policy today, on All Saints Day, front page, above the fold, New York Times, Trump clings to his image as strongman. The story's from their top reporter Peter Baker when former President Donald Trump's longest-serving chief of staff said last month that his old boss falls into the general definition of fascist. Mr. Trump let loose with insults assailing the one-time right hand as a low, total degenerate, a lowlife, a bad general. But what he didn't do was actually deny that he was or aspired to be a fascist. Any other politician might consider that a damning denunciation worth rebutting, but Trump does not. And Congressman Bustani, is this just Trump projecting, or is this the real Trump?
Well, I believe it's the real Trump, based on his actions, the way he's conducted himself. Let's just go back to January 6th for a moment. I firmly believe he violated his oath of office and brought the country to the brink of danger with that. His own vice president condemned him for what he did on that day. And I'll quote what Mike Pence said.
Hold the quote. We'll get to it when we return in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. And we're spending a few more minutes with Charles Bustani, the former congressman from the Lafayette area who ran and lost a close one in 2016 for the U.S. Senate. He worked as a lobbyist, and now he's also a physician, as we know. He is a student at UL. He has a quest for knowledge and a curiosity about our world that is refreshing. But as we hit the break, he was talking about January 6th, which remains an issue, and Trump, former President Trump, calls it a love fest. But you see it differently, and you say that some of the quotes from the vice president, the former vice president Mike Pence, indicate that there was division at very high levels of Trump's inner sanctum on what was going on that day. What was the quote you were about to recite to us?
Right. Well, Vice President Pence has said that anyone who puts himself over the Constitution should never be president of the United States. Mike's a good friend of mine. I served with him in Congress. I respect him. I sometimes disagreed with him on issues, but I think he's a principled person. And former President Trump's own vice president to say that about Trump is pretty damning in my view. But it's not just Mike Pence. It's secretaries of defense that served under Trump, national security advisors, and other senior officials who have said the same. The problem is he's not a principled, serious, sober, and steady leader that can advance and defend our American security and values. He's already shown that he will wreck alliances, which are critically important for protecting our democracy. And I can give you an example. I had the opportunity, since I've left Congress, to travel to South Korea, to Japan, and to Germany, all very important allies. And I've met with key business leaders. I've met with senior officials in those countries. And uniformly, they are really concerned about the direction that the United States will take under a second Trump presidency. And these are key allies that we need going forward. But to hear the concerns and question the reliability of the United States because of what they see with Trump if he ends up being elected is problematic, to say the least. And again, it goes back to the danger that's out there around the world, the kinds of threats the country faces, both on the economic and security front. We need steady leadership, and I firmly believe that Donald Trump is not the person to do that, and that's why I'm supporting Kamala Harris.
Rebel in Baton Rouge, please be brief. We'll take a few calls for Congressman Bustani. Hi, Rebel.
Hi, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Mr. Bustani. It seems as though that the problem with you not being a Republican anymore is that you do have some principles. And I wanted to get your reaction to the great protector, Donald Trump, who was a friend of Jeff Epstein and an adjudicated rapist and broker.
All right. What's your question? Right, what is your question, Rebel? What is your question?
Well, he says,
what is your question? I don't want you giving quotes. Thing, I want you to ask a question. What is your question?
I got it. Well, it seems to me that it's the same philosophy that they have with women and other
All right. There's not a question there, so we'll move on. James and Harvey. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, James.
Yes, ma'am. I want to wonder if you could just tell me which way you think this is going to go, or the direction of politics in general. Is it more like a pendulum, or is it more like a parabola? Because things do change, and if they do, what do you think is going to take to make some significant change?
What about Trump's impact? Are we going to have more Trumpian characters after him, or is he a one-and-done kind of figure?
Well, I don't think he's one-and-done. I think after Trump, you're going to have others who have embraced the same approach, and that's the problem I have with the Republican Party. I'm seeing senior leaders in the Republican Party, whether they're governors, senators, members of the House of Representatives, and others, taking the same approach from a policy standpoint. It's reflected in the platform of the Republican Party. And so I think this is a major shift in Republican politics. I don't know how long it will last. I don't think anybody does. We do know that in American politics, there are pendulum swings, but I don't know how long this shift will last. I think it will last longer than my lifetime, which is one of the reasons why I decided to dissociate myself from the Republican Party and to become an independent. But I am deeply concerned about the damage that can be done if Trump is elected and that pendulum continues to go in the direction he has pushed it.
Let's go to James in Metairie. James, what is your question for Congressman Bustani?
Well, good morning, Jim and Mr. Bustani. Sir, I'd like to have your opinion on something. Earlier this year, Donald Trump said he would encourage Russia to do whatever the hell they want to any NATO member country that doesn't meet spending guidelines on defense.
All right. What do you make of that? Is that just pap, or is that real concerning rhetoric?
I am deeply, deeply concerned that the someone who is hoping to be president of the United States again and was president of the United States before has used that kind of rhetoric, because words matter. And to say that to the Russian leader, Vladimir Putin, is extremely disturbing and dangerous. And of course, now you see North Korean troops being deployed by Vladimir Putin. He senses he's got carte blanche to do what he wants. And I'm fearing even worse for right. Ukraine and for Central and Eastern Europe going forward with another Trump term in office.
All right. We've got one more caller who's been waiting a while, and we want to slide him in before we get to the great Charlie Cook. Mike in Lafayette. Mike, you have the floor with Congressman Bustani.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Mr. Bustani what he would like. How do we distinguish between when Trump is merely trolling people and really serious about what he'll do?
All right. Can you
distinction,
Jim. Or can you make the distinction?
Well, again, let me just say that for somebody who has the bully pulpit as president of the United States, words matter, and they're taken seriously abroad. I've seen this directly. And secondly, Trump's actions typically follow his words. He had some guardrails in place during the first term by many of these people who are now opposing him in office. A second Trump term will not have those guardrails, and Trump will be basically unchained from his rhetoric, and that rhetoric will have impact. But secondly, I worry about his actions. He's not serious. He's not principled. He's not steady, and the kinds of things he might do could create major problems in a world that's fraught with all kinds of challenges right now. So
right.
I take the words seriously, because I think the actions follow his words, and we've seen this with him too often.
Well, we look forward to catching up with you after the election, Congressman Bustani, and thanks for your service to our state and our country.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be with you.
Nice to be with you. We're joined now by Charles Edward Cook, Jr., the pride of Shreveport, who is considered by many to be the foremost election analyst in the world. And he has been doing this thing for a long time, since he got out of Georgetown, I believe in 1976. And in 1984, he founded the Cook Political Report. And he not only follows presidential politics, but the House and the Senate, and the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter now, who is his protege and has been on this show, is still going strong. And Charlie Cook, among other things, is teaching at LSU. But we're about a minute from going to a break, short break, Charlie. But how do you see not only the presidency and the House and the Senate right now? Are they all close, or do the Republicans have the Senate and likely to keep the House and may win the presidency? How's it look?
Well, the Republicans are going to win the control of the Senate. The question is, do they have like 51, 52, 53, 54 seats, something like that? The House is jump ball, maybe tiny edge to Republicans, maybe. And the presidential, you know, you've got, I was looking at the New York Times averages of polls, six out of 14 numbers, you know, seven states, two candidates, six are 49, seven are 48, and one 47. It's hard to get any closer than that.
It's amazing.
You know, the old thing about those who know aren't talking and those who are talking don't know. Well, that's half right.
Well, we'll be back after this timeout with more from the legendary Charlie Cook on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. And the Talk Louisiana number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're visiting with Charlie Cook, the fabled political analyst who specializes in forecasts and trends. And quite often we have races that are projected as being close, and then in the end somebody pulls away, like Obama against Romney in 2012. That ended up being a fairly comfortable win for Obama. Reagan and Carter in 1980, that turned out to be a landslide, but it was close until the final 10 days. Now, Charlie Cook, is it possible that one of these candidates could pull away, or is this going to be a very long process as far as determining who the victor is?
Oh, boy, what a question. First, it's an honor to be on, Jim. The thing is, at some point, deciders decide. And for some of them, it may be deciding not to vote at all. But for those that do, they usually don't break straight down the middle. And, you know, we've seen, 2016, 18, 20, they all broke the same way. 2008 as well, they all broke pretty much the same way. But the two Bush elections in 2000 and 2004, those two kind of split down the middle. So usually, somebody's got that last gust of wind at the end, and the sort of dominoes tend to go more one way than the other. But you know, you remember in 2016, there were seven swing states, same seven. Trump won six and only lost Nevada, and then in 2020, Biden won six and only lost North Carolina. So, oftentimes there is a break towards the end.
And the conventional wisdom by many in our realm is that if Harris wins the presidency, Democrats have a pretty good shot of getting the House back. But if Trump wins, the Republicans have the edge, and that would mean that Donald Trump would take office with his party in control of the House and Senate, if that scenario is accurate. Do they have coattails that will perhaps involve the U.S. House?
Well, I'm not a big fan of the coattails thing, but I think, you know, usually if there is a turnout dynamic that helps one party in the presidential, more often than not, you'll see it in the House as well. But the House is so close. I mean, out of 435 seats, there's a, four-seat Republican edge right now. So, you could see anything, within four or five seats one way or the other. So, it's entirely possible that there's a split there. But one thing that's interesting is if the House flips from Republican to Democrat and the Senate flips from Democrat to Republican, it'll be the first time in history that the two chambers have both flipped in opposite directions.
That would be notable, but it appears the House will be very close, extremely close.
I mean, if you wanted to put a tiny finger on the scale for Republicans, you might do that just because they start four seats ahead. So, Democrats have to pick up four seats before. I mean, mm-hmm. Republicans can lose three seats and still technically be in charge. So, but it's mm-hmm. it's basically a coin flip.
Well, some people who work for Garrett Graves, they have noted, and it may not be an exaggeration, that the seat that was redrawn by a Republican governor and a Republican legislature in Louisiana could end up being the deciding seat for who controls the U.S. House of Representatives. Wouldn't that be something?
That's conceivable. It's certainly a interesting looking district.
Well, we have had a few listeners, and Charlie has another meeting in a few minutes, but I think it's worth noting, that, as you said, that the last two times the late momentum went for Donald Trump, both in 2016 and in 2020. Now, was that really momentum, or is that just that his voters are more committed to getting out and voting, and will that repeat in 2024, as in next Tuesday?
Well, I think polls are more accurate than most people think, but they were off twice in 2016 and 20, in that they undersampled Trump voters. Now, pollsters hate to be wrong. It doesn't matter whether they're Republican, Democrat, or nonpartisan. They don't want to be wrong. So they've been making all kinds of changes. Now, the question is, did they fix the problem? Yes or no? Have they overcompensated for it? We don't know, and they don't know. So, I tend to think that there's just as much of a chance that they overcorrected that than they undercorrected. But, you know, we'll see. But, you know, basically both sides are looking at effectively the same numbers. And as I said at the outset, when you've got, you know, 47, 48, 49, polling is not, never has, and never will be precise enough to pull out a leader when it's all packed up that close.
Finally, a listener notes that Pennsylvania may be the state. Whoever wins that state is likely to win the presidency. Not a certainty, but Harris opted to choose a running mate from Minnesota, a state that's gone Democratic every year since 1972, instead of Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who's the most popular politician in the Quaker state. Did she make a mistake?
Well, when someone walks in for a job interview and they kick you off immediately with a long list of demands, it'd take a pretty weak person to cave in and pick that person after all. And that meeting, by all accounts, did not go well. And, at what point do you just do political expediency, or do you say, do I want this guy in my co-pilot seat?
Well, James Carville, a listener, asked him a few weeks ago on this show, and he said, well, Jack Kennedy certainly didn't like LBJ, but he did what he had to do.
Well, he did deliver Texas. And arguably that was the last time a running mate made a serious, serious difference. I mean, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance were both right when they said that running mates don't matter. That's sort of the rule. And I think LBJ, JFK was something of an exception, but, you know, you'd be hard pressed to say, you know, John McCain lost because of Sarah Palin. It wasn't a great pick, but, you know, that's not.
And George Bush, the second one, or the first one rather, he won a landslide 40 states with Dan Quayle.
With Dan Quayle, yeah. So, you know, people tend to seize on one thing and sort of exclude everything else. But I do think that, you know, by all accounts, that meeting didn't go well. And I'd think long and hard before I pick somebody that I just, you know, disagreed with from the get-go on, you know, what they wanted. So he's a very popular. Last thing I saw, 59% job approval rating Shapiro had in Pennsylvania. So that was a tough call.
And he has been the good soldier. Whatever disagreements they had, you can't blame him for losing Pennsylvania, and she may win there. You've got it pretty much neck and neck, don't you?
Yeah. And the thing is, if she loses, then that puts him in a pretty good position running next, you know, running in 2028. If she had only picked him, you know, that'd have won. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the conventional wisdom would be. And, I can understand how they got there, but, you know, there's There's data, you know, there's data, there are theories, there are hunches and wishful thinkings. And data does not give any indication whatsoever who's going to come out on top of this. And, you know, I don't trust my hunches anymore, and I don't know that anybody else should well, trust theirs, because hunches have been real wrong.
Right,
lately,
they've been wrong, but Nate Silver, he went there. He said the data shows it's even, but his gut tells him it's Trump. But does your gut tell you anything, Charlie Cook?
I'm trying to suppress my gut. The thing is, I think that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are trying their hardest to lose this election in campaign style. I think their campaign is very good, by the way, in terms of ads and all that. But the question is, will they succeed?
The stump stuff is, you're right. They're potentially snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. But with
and will they succeed? Yeah. And Congress, I mean, they're like poker players, where Kamala Harris drew a really bad hand, given only, 40% of Americans, 39, 40% think the Biden administration has been a success, and close to 60% a failure. I mean, so between the border, the cost of living, all these things, a bad hand. But she's playing it actually reasonably well. And Trump, conversely, was dealt a really good hand, but I'd say he's playing about as badly as he could.
And the goodwill he got after the assassination attempt, he completely squandered that. But on that day, I thought it was over. And with the debate with Biden, my goodness, it appeared that Biden was dead on arrival. And I think you would concur that if he were on the ticket now, it'd be a disaster for the Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. No, we'd be talking about, would Democrats be losing 10, 15, 20, 25 seats in the House and, 5, 6, 7 Senate seats. No, it would have been a disaster. And that's why, I mean, the irony is we'd never had a debate that early. It was the Biden campaign's idea, because they wanted to kind of shake the race up, and they pushed for an early debate, and, it pushed their guy out of the race. And Democrats got a mulligan. Whether they win this thing or not, they got a chance to drive twice,
And Harris is a much better candidate now than she was 4 years ago. She is strong, but she's an exotic person, and that may be a determining factor.
When she was speaking at the convention and in the debate, I was watching thinking, who in the world is this? Because the woman I saw campaigning out in Iowa in 2019 was an awful candidate. And in the first couple of years, as vice president, she didn't cover herself with glory. But, she's done, I think, a lot better.
Well, Charlie, we got to go. And I know you have an appointment that's probably waiting for you. But God bless you. Keep going. We'll be calling again soon. Charlie Cook, and we're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WWNO 89.9 New Orleans and WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge. And in just a moment, we'll hear from Capitol reporter Brooke Thorington and Greg LaRose, the editor of the Louisiana Illuminator. But it is All Saints Day, which is an important day for people in this area. It is, of course, a holy day of obligation in the Holy Roman Catholic Church, of which yours truly is a member, but it's also noted that it's observed by many other Christian denominations, including the Lutherans, Methodists, and we can go down the line. And it is a day that has significance for Louisiana in 1966 on this date. The New Orleans Saints were awarded a franchise in the National Football League. The ceremony was at the Pontchartrain Hotel, and because the famous singer from Europe, Maurice Chevalier from France, he was being presented in the big room at the Pontchartrain. Pete Rozelle and the NFL had to go to a much smaller room, and on hand were Hale Boggs, Moon Landrieu, Victor Skiro, who was the mayor of New Orleans at that time, John McKithen, the governor of Louisiana, Russell Long, U.S. Senator, Alan Ellender, U.S. Senator. And at 11:11 a.m. on November 1, 1966, Pete Rozelle cut to the chase by saying professional football is voted a franchise to the state of Louisiana and the city of New Orleans. And one of the owners was none other than Jumbo, Al Hurt, who at that time in 1966 was all of 43 years old. And Al Hurt kind of let the cat out of the bag on a morning talk show by saying it was going to happen and even saying it was going to be called the Saints, the team. But for those who remember, here was Al Hurt shortly after the Saints got their franchise, and of course he was proud that his hometown had become a member of the National Football League. All right, that's Al with his horn. I think we had some words from Al, too, but we'll save those for another day. By the way, his birthday is November 7th, 1922, so in 6 days, Al Hurt, if he were still with us, would be 102, and the great Johnny Rivers, perhaps the most famous singer to come from Baton Rouge, was born on the same day 20 years later. Johnny will be 82 years old. And we're joined now by Brooke Thorington and Greg LaRose, and early voting set a record in Louisiana. 849,784 voters have already cast ballots for the presidential election and all the others. And this is significant for any number of reasons. It's up. It looks like we'll have an all-time record as far as participation in this race. But almost as many people voted early this time as voted completely in the governor's election a year ago. And Brooke Thorington, I know you were at the Archives Building, and the turnstiles were singing, shall we say. People were enthused about this election.
Yeah, and people seemed pretty positive in line. You know, I did see one voter that he had to leave because he was wearing inappropriate clothing. But for the most part, they said everything went smoothly. And, you know, 850,000 cast their votes in 10 days. And the previous in-person record was 818,000, and that was set in the last presidential election. And then, of course, like you were talking about, we set a new record for a single day of early voting. In 2020, it was 99,000 was the highest, and we had 103,000 cast on the last day of early voting for this election. So pretty impressive turnout.
Yes, indeed. Well, the number of Republicans outnumbered the number of Democrats. And 4 years ago, Democrats actually outnumbered Republicans in early voting. And Louisiana, believe it or not, still has more Democrats than Republicans, a plurality of Democrats. But this time it was heavily Republican, 430,000 Republicans and 344,000 Democrats. And Greg, Donald Trump won convincingly last time. I would say that statewide, these numbers are encouraging for Trump supporters. He quite likely will soar to victory in Louisiana.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, Jim, just by what margin. It's been 58% the last two times that he's been on the ballot for president. Another number that jumps out at me from the early voting and absentee counts so far is the number of women who have voted. They comprised 57% of the nearly 1 million ballots that have been cast. If you look at it from a straight-up demographic comparison, women account for just a shade over 50% of the population, which sort of mirrors the national demographic. But that's a pretty substantial, in my book at least, difference. And you have to wonder, you know, are those voters motivated by reproductive rights, not necessarily being on the ballot here as an amendment or such, but clearly the two candidates are very diametrically opposed on the issue of abortion, IVF, and you know, other such pregnancy care type decisions.
Right, and Brooke, there is a big gender gap nationally. It appears that women will vote overwhelmingly for Kamala Harris and men for Donald Trump. So as far as the female participation, that is an interesting wrinkle in Louisiana, and we'll see if that changes anything.
And also to point out that the fact that you technically we have more registered Democrats in Louisiana, but just because you're registered one way doesn't mean you're going to vote that way. I think a lot of people haven't necessarily changed how their registration will. I think they will when we go to close primary, but we do have more registered Democrats than Republicans here in Louisiana. But as we see, voting wise, that doesn't necessarily carry through.
And this time around, the remarkable thing in Louisiana is that we don't have a really hot race on the ballot. The Baton Rouge mayor's race is the hottest race in the state right now. So turnout will probably be high in East Baton Rouge Parish. But independent of that, the other congressional seats, including the one with Cleo Fields, are thought to be all but decided. Now, there could be a runoff, but the latest polling shows former Congressman Fields in pretty good shape in his quest to return to Capitol Hill 27 years later. But we love voting for presidential elections. And last year we had a governor's election and all the other statewide offices, Greg, and only a little more than 35% of the people showed up. And we have had this trend in Louisiana. I think it's to a lesser degree, but still notable nationally. People are now more juiced up about national politics than they are local politics. And Tip O'Neill's old adage that all politics are local doesn't appear to be the case anymore.
No, it doesn't really. And I think quite a few folks are scratching their heads as to the reasons why. We can speculate in Louisiana that some of that has to do with rather weak candidates that the Democratic Party has put forward and stronger ones on the Republican side. And, you know, when you look at these turnout figures, I feel that that's part of it. It may be a little reading into the results too much at this point, because, again, to your point, yeah, you've seen Louisiana really soar for presidential races, but I think there may be just a bit of that hangover from last year's race for the governor's seat, where clearly, like this, the state Democratic Party was very much in disarray. You know, this year, not having even fielded a candidate in the 4th congressional district against House Speaker Mike Johnson, albeit, you know, that would have been a hard obstacle to overcome. Just the fact that there was not a single Democrat that stepped forward to enter that race, I think it says something about the state of the party here in Louisiana.
And there are those who say that Jeff Landry really didn't have a mandate because so few people voted last year, but people make a choice not to vote too. And of those who did, he won without a runoff. So I think it is a mandate, and he's governing as such. He's going for the gold on any number of fronts. And the latest, he's trying to revamp the state's tax system. And next Wednesday, the day after the presidential election, Brooke, he's going to the legislature to ask them to support what would be a sweeping tax change in our state.
He sure is. No rest for the weary here. You know, I think we're all going to be a little lacking of sleep on Wednesday, and then we're going to start into a special session that's supposed to wrap up by the 25th on that Monday, right before the Monday before Thanksgiving. And he's got 23 items on there. The majority of them are with tax reform. But then there's some other ones thrown in there about, you know, putting amendments on and juvenile crime and some judicial branch things and for special elections. So, and that will kind of coincide with whatever they pass. If they pass any, you know, with a two-thirds majority, then that would go into the election in March.
And Greg, he takes a big risk here because if the voters don't approve it, that generally will be viewed as a significant defeat. But he's going there. He's trying his best to get what he wants.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's by no means a lock that he'll get the Republican-heavy legislature on his side in this because the package contains what amounts to new taxes and the preservation of a temporary tax as kind of the backbone of this restructuring. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, he can sway. I would anticipate there's going to be a lot of back and forth. And the way this is constructed, they'll have to basically, it's an all or none proposition.
It's all or none. And we'll talk with Greg and Brooke again next week. Stay safe. Stay tuned.